Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Tremendous Thursday to you. It is October the 6th, 2022, and you can call in right now. Grab a line to call in and talk to me for free on the Cale Clark Show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Once again, 888-914-9149. The email address, great place to send questions, comments, show ideas. Cale, C-A-L-E at relevantradio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark. C-A-L-E, Clark with an E, and the Cale Clark Show account is at Cale Clark Show. We got really creative with that name. Glad to have you on board today. Today is the Feast of St. Bruno. I know nothing about him, so I'm not going to talk about him. The only Bruno I know about right now is from Encanto, because I've been forced to watch that a lot, having a six-year-old daughter. We don't talk about Bruno. So I'm not going to talk about Bruno today, but I'm going to talk about something else that's been on my mind. It's been in the culture, and sometimes we can we're not maybe thinking about this as much as we should. The topic of VAD, voluntary assisted death. It's also known by the acronym MAID, M-A-I-D, medical assistance in dying, and these are both other names for euthanasia. Now, the pro-life cause obviously got a great boost with the recent Supreme Court of the United States decision to strike down Roe, throwing the matter back to the states. And there's still a lot of work to be done on that front too. But I think the cultural conversation around pro-life issues in the United States has sometimes, because of this news, and a lot of it's really good news that we've heard recently, we've tended to forget a little bit about what's going on when it comes to end-of-life issues, specifically euthanasia. And I can tell you, living in Canada, where euthanasia has been legal since 2016, we are indeed already on that slippery slope where, you know, we were promised once it came into law that don't worry, this would only be in extreme cases. Well, it's not. Now we have lots of recorded evidence. A case came out a few weeks ago where a guy who was in the hospital, he wasn't dying or anything like that. He had a condition. He secretly recorded his doctors asking him, hey, have you considered euthanasia? You know, you're taking up a valuable bed that could be used for another patient. And no, I don't want this. Just the other day, a 22-year-old, a young man, I heard about this. My wife told me that she got a message through her network of friends. There's this young man who wanted to enter into a process of MAID, medical assistance in dying. He wanted to end his life because of an eye condition. He's gone blind in one eye, which is obviously tragic, but he just doesn't think life is worth living anymore. And he applied, his case was accepted, and he was to be euthanized just a few days ago. We got the call from relatives of his that were very concerned about him. We prayed, lots of people were praying, and well, his appointment got canceled. Something happened with the doctor, and so he's had some more time to think about it, and I pray that he doesn't go through with it. I ask you to pray for him. I don't know what his name is, but so we have cases that have popped up all over the world. For example, in the Netherlands, where it's a regular occurrence that children ask to be euthanized when they are in a place that they don't want to be. They're emotionally distraught. Perhaps they're being bullied. Perhaps they're dealing with all kinds of issues that young people deal with. So this is not just something that people are tempted to do when they're on in years. But I think it's important to understand the mindset of those who are considering making this move with tragic consequences. It's important to understand how they think so that we can help them. And I read a piece that appeared in New York Magazine and their feature called The Cut. It was written by Rachel Handler, and she wrote about the father of her partner, the grandfather of her partner, whose name is Adam. This guy's name was David. He was 85 years old. He lived in Chicago. He was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease about 10 years ago when he was 75, and he recently took his own life via VAD, voluntary assisted death. And I believe he went out of the country, went out of the United States to do it because it is illegal in the United States. I don't know if there's any states where it actually is legal. But just to, by the way, the word euthanasia, in case you were wondering, comes from, it's a Greek word, which is kind of a combination of two other words. EU, which in Greek means good. Think of the euangelion or the evangelion, the good news, the angelion, the message, the angelic message of the gospel. So that's where we get the word evangelism from. But euthanasia means good death. Thanatos means death. So euthanasia means good death. But is it really? Is it really? I just realized, you know, Thanos. Maybe that's why Thanos is got his name from death, you know, from the character from Avengers movies, Endgame. Anyways, okay. But so I just want to read to you this interview that Rachel Handler did with Grandpa David, who was 85 years old, and he had contacted the family to let them know that he was going to proceed with his plan to have what he called a quote-unquote peaceful, dignified death. And as his mobility, his quality of life had declined especially over the last couple of years, he'd been thinking about this more and more, and he went so far as to reach out to a facility in Switzerland where, of course, euthanasia is legal. So Rachel Handler, who wrote the article in The Cut, and it just came out a couple of days ago in the New Yorker magazine, had kind of a strained relationship with this guy for many years, but they'd kind of come to a bit of an understanding, a bit of a truce, if you will. And she actually interviewed him. She wanted to interview him, and of course he knew that she was a journalist, and she said, look, do you mind if I interview you about why you want to do this? Because her partner, Adam, David's son, he's not really going to understand this. He may have questions down the line. There's certain ways that he processes stuff. And she kind of wanted to crawl inside his mind and understand what would make him make a choice like this. So I wanted to read this little interview that they did together. And then I'd like you, as you're listening, to call in. I want you to kind of pick this apart. What are some of the attitudes that David was displaying here where he could have been helped? And this, what would you say to somebody if you had a grandfather or there's an elderly person in your life who's considering doing this? What would your response be? How would you talk to this person? Now, this guy, David, he seems to have been coming from a fairly secular point of view. But we'll see what some of his reasoning processes were as we go along. So I'm just going to read some snippets of this to you. So Rachel Handler asks David this question. You've been considering voluntary assisted death for 2 years. Why now? And David says, quote, oh, I'll tell you the reason. I can't see anymore. My eyes, they're out of focus. I'm seeing double. It took me three or four times to dial you on the phone because I can't control my hands. I can't control my fingers. I can't write my name. I can't control a pen. The only way I can communicate now is basically by dictation. And then I can't correct the errors. I know what people say about Lou Gehrig's disease, that you're locked in your own body. That's how I feel. I'm dizzy all the time. If I don't have a walker, I'll fall. I can do 20 push-ups right now, but when I'm down on the ground, I can't get up by myself. I have to hold onto the walls, the table, the chairs. Parts of my body work, the parts that are muscular, but nothing that needs any help from the brain. What I see in front of me is scary. I can't control it. I don't want to become a burden. I've watched others go through this. They don't have a choice. I'm not reactive. I'm proactive. I think about the choices I have. I don't let them happen to me. I don't let Mother Nature control me totally. I don't let anyone control me. I decide myself what I want to do, and I do it. So that's a quote from David, this 85-year-old Chicago man, who essentially entered into a process of voluntary assisted death and ended his life just a few days ago. And this was an interview that was done with David by Rachel Handler, whose partner Adam is the son of this guy. So this was in New York Magazine and The Cut. So I wanted, again, this is to get inside the mindset of somebody who's thinking about doing this. And obviously this guy was in his right mind. A lot of cases of suicide involve mental illness. People aren't thinking straight. But this guy obviously had been thinking about this decision of euthanasia for quite some time. So Rachel asked him this, is your decision mostly about being a burden? And he said, no, it's about me. I can't live like that. She asked him, you first started thinking about this a few years ago, right? And David responded, I started the process 2 years ago. I didn't know whether or not I'd need it. That's why we buy insurance. You may never need it, but if you do, you've got it. But it changed when my eyes no longer worked and I couldn't control my fingers. That's when I said, I have to go. It's only in the last 3 months it's gotten unbearable. I went to see the doctor to be able to sleep, and he had to help me from my walker to a chair. Parkinson's is a destruction of the pathways that nerve impulses travel. Yours are a clear highway. Mine are broken up. The impulse doesn't get to where it's going without being damaged. That part of my brain doesn't work anymore. And Rachel asked him, are you scared to go through with this? David responded, I'm not the least bit scared. I'm scared if I don't do it. That's my fear. That's why I'm calling the people I know to say goodbye. I want them not to be scared for me. I'm not happy I'm doing it. It's contrary to my belief about life, which is so precious, so unique, so wonderful. I don't want to do this. I don't want to leave this wonderful world, to leave you and Adam and what life's about. But I don't want to end up like people I've watched die. It is brutal. That's where I'm going. And I have a choice not to do it. I have a choice to be remembered as being alive and not looked at with pity. Climbing the hill of life is challenging but marvelous. The way down is slippery, literally. It's easier to walk up than down, even though gravity helps you. I have these conversations so people like you can process it and not feel sorry. And then Rachel asked him, do you think there's a chance you'll get to the moment of death and change your mind? And David responded, there's always a possibility. I live in a world of possibilities, not conclusions. It could happen, but it won't happen. I recently went through a time period where I was out of control. I was yelling, I became the disease. The last couple of weeks, my son said to me, you seem so comfortable in doing what you're doing. I am comfortable. For me, it's the right thing. I can't speak for anybody else. And then she asked him, how did you find this place where you're going? And apparently, he had found it in a magazine article. And he reached out to this organization in Switzerland about 2 years ago. And for legal reasons, apparently they only communicate with him by email. They don't want to, quote unquote, encourage or discourage. They make sure that you're not being coerced, that you're making the decision on your own. Probably they don't want to get sued. And they want to make sure that the person really is wanting to do this and they're not being coerced in any way. So you sort of have to prove that you are in your right mind when you get there. Apparently, there's a psychiatrist that somebody meets with, and he has to sort of sign off on this, that the person is of sound mind. And then Rachel asked him, how exactly will they help you die? And David said, intravenously. They don't do it. I do it. It's one of only three places on earth where assisted end of life is permitted. There's only one condition that I understand what I'm doing. They say, here's what you have to do. They don't tell you how to do it, but it's a very thorough investigation. End of quote. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. I'm reading this interview that was done with a man who recently ended his own life through euthanasia. He was 85 years old, lived in Chicago, suffered from Parkinson's disease for 10 years. And he explained to Rachel Handler, writing for New York Magazine, her partner Adam is the son of this man. She's trying to get inside his mind and figure out why he did this. And this is good for us to know, because as we fight these battles and try to hopefully help people not make this choice, we need to know how they think. We need to know what's going through their mind in the hopes that we can kind of understand the mentality. I find that in a lot of different things, especially when you're doing Catholic apologetics, you're trying to explain and defend the faith, you do have to understand where the position, the mindset of the person across the table from you. They're trying to bring onto the same side of the table as you. You have to understand how they think. You don't just have to know the teaching of the church, the teaching of Jesus Christ. You also have to know your friend. You have to know the mind of the person that you're talking to, and to be able to reach them and to know what's going to work. So And I want you to call in. I want you to tell me what you would say to this person to try to talk them out of this, some of the faulty thought patterns that are there. And we'll get into a church teaching on this and how the church has responded to this. But it's something that you need to know because it is coming down the line. It is coming to your state. It is coming to your city. Mark my words, in the next, the Supreme Court of the United States is probably going to have to deal with this issue at some point. We shall see. But here's more from the interview with David by Rachel Handler of New York Magazine. So she asked him, how long does this take? And by the way, what actually happens is the person is injected with something called sodium pentobarbital in a syringe. And as David explained, he would have to push the button down himself, force it out of the bottle into his body, and then he would simply fall asleep. And after about 10 minutes, he would be clinically dead. She asked him, will you be alone? My children will be with me, holding my hand. They want to hold my hand as I drift off. They want to be there as I am no longer alive. That's their desire. Did you want them there, or did you want to be alone? He was asked, and David said, my preference for myself is alone. If they wanted to be there, I said, of course. Rachel said, quote, I think it's a brave way to die. It's a really difficult choice. David says, I say the opposite. It's the easy way out. In a way, I don't want to let Mother Nature dictate to me. I'm challenging Mother Nature. How presumptuous of me. Who am I not to allow her to do her thing? But when I see friends, what they've gone through in their dying days, I'm just preventing that. The burden on individuals and on society. Consuming medical attention that the young people are entitled to. I've thought this through for 2 years, and I'm very comfortable with what I'm doing. She asked him, what would you do if this wasn't available to you? He said, well, you can put a do not resuscitate in your will. I've done that for a long time. If I didn't have that insurance policy, I would starve myself. 8 days without food and water. I wouldn't use a knife or jump off a building in front of a car. That's a violent death. I want a pleasant death. I want a natural death, end of quote. So they go on to talk about where this is going to happen in Switzerland. And Rachel said something interesting in her next question. She said, my grandma is in a similar facility. She has dementia. I've thought about the way we treat the elderly in our society and in our country. I'm curious if the circumstances were different around the way we've treated the elderly, if you would feel any different about your decision. And David said, quote, they don't command respect, the elderly. I can't explain to you the pain, the frustration, gestalt of what I live with, that I can do push-ups, but I can't write my name, I can't see. All of these things happen recently. When I go to my computer or my iPhone, I want to touch your name, I hit someone else's name. If I can't control how I speak, when I speak, who am I? I'm a prisoner in my own body. And then Rachel asked him, I guess my question is, if there were other options for you as an elderly person, is it possible that you wouldn't be doing this? And he said, no, I'm just one of a subsection of people. When I first had Parkinson's, it didn't bother me. In the last month, the vector of decline has been so fast and so critical. What am I left with? Frustration, fear of what happens next. There's a much higher probability I'm going to die from falling and then get pneumonia. Because Parkinson's takes away your balance, I'm thinking about risk. Do I allow Mother Nature to do her thing her way, or do I help her do it my way? She said, do you feel like your only options are now either to live in this home and decline or go to Switzerland? What if there were another option available to you, like living with your family? He said, no, it's not about living. It's about the disease preventing me from the ordinary things that people do that they have some control over. It's about quality of life. She asked, are the doctors trying to convince you not to do this? He said, every doctor I've ever been to, I tell them right away, but I'm not asking for their permission. The only one who tried to talk me out of it, he said, was a psychiatrist today. I'm still trying. I talked to a psychiatrist. I'm ready to go bye-bye on Sunday morning, but I'm still trying to figure it out. Is there any way I cannot do this and still have some quality of life without risking being a vegetable, becoming a burden on people? But I'm risk averse. Rachel said, what did the psychiatrist say to you? He said, she told me, "Don't do it, Davey. We'll cut down your pain." I said, "Doc, you can cut down my pain, but then you take my mind away. The only way to dull the pain is to decrease the awareness of the body." "Did you convince them you were right?" He said, "No, I didn't try to convince them. I'm not seeking approval. I just tell them. I respect who they are. If they ask me a question, I'll answer it. Chicago has one of the best hospitals in the world, but they have no way of stopping the disease of an 85-year-old man. It's nature, the way we live and die, the way trees live and die, the way an animal lives and dies. It's not a choice. Who the heck wants to die? I don't. I've had so much fun in my life, the places I've gone to, the things I've done. I love it, but I can't enjoy it. The doctors say stay alive at any cost. When my wife was ill with pancreatic cancer, we stopped taking infusions of poison. We both agreed it just made her life more miserable. She was going to die soon. Let her die in peace in her bed without pain. Not in some hospital someplace. My daughter says, Dad, get some champagne for Mom. 7 hours later, she took her last breath. And so this conversation kind of goes on and on. And David was asked if his family had tried to talk him out of it. He said no. His children actually have never told me their opinion. They just said, if you want to do it, you've thought about it. We support you, Dad. And so this is a really interesting. It was just a fascinating conversation. It sort of was a snapshot of how a secular person deals with death and end-of-life issues. And here's an interesting question that that Rachel Handler asked David. She said, I think there are two reasons our culture is so uncomfortable with the idea of voluntary assisted death. I think part of it is the Christian theocracy, she called it, that's baked into American culture. This idea we can't offend or play God. And then there's the idea of not messing with nature. And he said, I am messing with it. I am messing with nature. I am being very presumptuous. So what do you guys think about this? What would you say to somebody who's in this position, who's thinking about doing this? Anyways, it's a conversation that we need to have. And I'm going to talk to you about what Cardinal Collins of Toronto, who dealt with this when euthanasia was legalized in Canada, what was his response to this? What is the church's response to these issues? It's important. It's something that we need to know. But I want to hear your opinion. 888-914-9149. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. Today, we'd like to thank Blanca, who's listening in California, for donating her Honda. Join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles by visiting relevantradio.com/car today.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant
Radio. Hey, welcome back to the program. It's the Cale Clark Show. You can call in right now, 888-914-9149. Just before the break, I shared a story with you from The Cut in New York Magazine, where Rachel Handler interviewed David, who was the grandfather of her partner, a guy named Adam. And David, who was 85 years old, living in Chicago, ended his own life through euthanasia in Switzerland on September the 20th. And she interviewed him about why he did this, what was his reasoning process. And it was kind of a glimpse inside a secular mind. And he was kind of he came from a Jewish background, but a very secular Jew, wasn't too into his faith. He apparently did talk to a rabbi about this at some level. But I wanted to get inside this mindset because as this becomes a more prevalent problem in our culture, we need to know how to respond to it. And I want to hear what you think. 888-914-9149. And I want to share with you what a great friend of the program, Cardinal Thomas Collins, the Archdiocese of Toronto. He's been a guest on the show before. He's been dealing with this for the last several years on a pretty high profile level because back in 2016, the Supreme Court of Canada legalized euthanasia, and it has since become a bigger and bigger problem in our culture. Alex Schadenberg from the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition, he's been on Relevant Radio many times talking about this. I want to share with you a brief letter that Cardinal Collins wrote when the Supreme Court allowed the government to pass a bill legalizing assisted suicide. Now, here's what he wrote. Quote, this is Cardinal Collins, "There are two ways, the way to life and the way to death, and there is a great difference between them." These were words from an ancient Christian writer that come to mind as we mark Parliament's enactment of the law implementing the Supreme Court's decision on euthanasia and assisted suicide, which is a fundamentally misguided decision, end of quote. And that document that he's referencing, that early Christian document, is known as the Didache, or the Teaching of the 12 Apostles, which talks about the way of life and the way of death. It's a very famous early Christian document. And the Colonel went on to say this, quote, "Though I do not question the good intentions of either judges or legislators, their decisions have set our country down a path that leads not simply and obviously towards physical death for an increasing number of our fellow citizens, but towards a grim experience for everyone in our society of the coldness of spiritual death. That death is found in a loss of respect for the dignity of the human person, in a deadening pressure upon the vulnerable to be gone, and in an assault upon the sanctuary of conscience to be suffered by good individuals and institutions who seek only to heal." End of quote. And that last part was a reference to the fact that doctors will be pressured to do this for their patients, even when they disagree in their conscience and according to the dictates of their own religion, that this is wrong. And so, and that's becoming a real problem as well. And it, very similar to a doctor or a nurse who might be, the hospital that they work for might try to force them to take part in an abortion, for example. Let's go back to the Cardinal's letter here. Quote, "To those who are grievously suffering in body or spirit and who desperately seek relief, we need to be sure that you receive it through whatever medical means are available and through the loving care that you deserve. The question is not whether you need relief, it is how to find it. Suicide is not the answer to the very real question you face. Some may be consoled by the fact that the law could be worse. There are some quote-unquote safeguards protecting the vulnerable, and there is some conscience protection. Any thankfulness for these positive elements must, however, be set against the fact that in other places where euthanasia has been introduced, it has always been cloaked with safeguards, quote-unquote, that lull the citizens into complacency. Over the years, those safeguards gradually weaken and finally drop away, and then the full, hard, cold force of euthanasia is felt. Here is a chilling fact. Despite the confidence of the Supreme Court justices that Canada is different from those jurisdictions, in only slightly more than a year since their decision, the safeguards are already under vigorous attack." End of quote. So that's obviously the slippery slope that happens, and we've seen it. Go back to his letter here. He says, "The deepest roots of this malign development in the history of our country are spiritual." That's a great point, that they're really behind all of this. It's a spiritual problem in the culture. It's absolutely a spiritual problem in the culture. As St. Paul says, we do not fight against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, against the powers, against the world rulers of this present darkness. There's definitely a demonic force afoot, to be sure. And so he goes on to say, "In the weeks to come, I'll be suggesting ways to address them through prayer and penance." So we have to fight spiritual battles with spiritual weapons, and I think he's right to say that. "Our broader society," the Cardinal writes, "also needs to engage in the necessary but lengthy process of reflection upon the dire implications for every aspect of our life together. When we lose the fundamental ability to distinguish between dying and being killed, we all need to recognize the profound moral significance of that distinction. We also need to recognize the destructive consequences of reducing the dignity of the human person to a matter of autonomy, when actually it is our loving interdependence, not our independence, which sustains our dignity. We must not reduce worthiness to live to a matter of the ability to function according to some personally acceptable standard of performance. That, and by the way, just to interject, that's exactly what this guy David was doing. He was saying, well, I can't see as well anymore, and I my performance is slipping, I can't control my muscles, I don't want to be a burden. We must not reduce the worthiness to live to a matter of the ability to function according to some personally acceptable standard of performance. Cardinal Collins says we must address these and the other shaky foundations for the judicial and legislative actions which are taking us down a path to nowhere. That will take time and a persistent effort to raise and resolve these deeper issues with clarity and charity. Life, however, is a marathon, not a sprint. Our enterprise is begun and founded upon both reason and faith, and it will succeed in due time. End of quote. That's right, and I think this is a great part of the reason why Roe fell in the United States, because it was an unjust law, and an unjust law can only stand for so long. It just cannot stand forever. And so it eventually fell, and this will be dealt with too in time, but how much damage will be done in the meantime? And that's why Cardinal Collins says, in the meantime, we do need to take immediate steps. First, we need to make available for all people real medical assistance in dying. Real medical assistance in dying. By that, he means palliative care. Palliative care, that's what we need. We need so much more. We don't just need to encourage people to embrace euthanasia so that another person can get their bed in the hospital. No. We need better palliative care where people who are dying are surrounded with love, where any pain they do experience is countered with the best medical care available. Nobody, with the tools that we have today, nobody should have to die in pain. The second thing he said was, we need to speak forthrightly. When people feel compelled to use language in a way that does not reveal what is actually happening, but instead conceals it, it's a sign that something is radically wrong, and they know it. The now officially accepted terminology, such as quote-unquote medical assistance in dying, that does not describe medical assistance in dying, it describes killing. Let us say what we mean and mean what we say. Finally, we need to assure that the individuals who have dedicated their lives to healing, meaning, of course, physicians, will not be pressured into directly causing the death of their patients or into arranging for this to happen. Similarly, we must assure that those healthcare institutions, which are havens of hope, in a tradition whose noble roots long predate Confederation, will in no way be forced to violate their conscience, known as their mission. And then he quotes Psalm 90, verse 12, Lord, teach us the shortness of life that we may gain wisdom of heart. So that was Cardinal Collins' very beautiful and I think very forthright response to this. And so I think we really need to take a lot of these suggestions that he has to heart. And I have a friend who's a physician, and he's told me that in his practice he's come up against this already. And it happens in a couple of different ways. The first way it happens sometimes is that people who are elderly, they're afraid to tell him that they're sick or that they're having issues because they're afraid that he will recommend that they be euthanized and they don't want to die. And then, and so he's like, wow, like, don't worry, I'm not going to do this. And then the other thing that happens sometimes is that, unfortunately, some families are in fact asking for this for their loved ones. And he has to try to talk to them and explain to them that this need not to be done. And so doctors are in a tough situation as well. And so I don't know if you've come across this in your life with a loved one, with a relative, or whether or not you have any thoughts on this. How do you deal with this mindset? But it's certainly troubling. It's something that we have to be paying attention to, because this kind of sneaks up on us. Before you know it, legislation is passed here and there, and just kind of takes on a life of its own. Let's go to the phones right now. By the way, you can call in right now, 888-914-9149. Paul is calling from Youngstown, Ohio. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Cale. I had a friend about 3 years ago who passed away with ALS, and I had helped take care of him for a while, and when he went on hospice, they had put him on morphine and another drug called lorazepam, and I always felt like that maybe being on those drugs hastened his death because they would suppress breathing. And the hospice nurse wanted me to administer through the pump the morphine. I refused to do it. I said, no, my job here is to help him with daily activities of life, not to administer any drugs which could harm him. But he did have a hospice nurse, and he had relatives that came in, and from time to time would administer the morphine. What is the church's understanding of something like that? Because they have trouble breathing anyway once they reach a certain stage of ALS. And then if you give morphine, which could suppress them even farther, that just seems like it hastens the death.
Yeah, I think I would say that if the intent was to administer the drug in order to hasten the death, that would be unacceptable from a moral point of view. Obviously, morphine is used for management of pain, so that's a different ball game. And this is one of the things that Cardinal Collins was saying, that because of the tools we have today, things like morphine, nobody should need to be in excruciating pain as they're passing through death. But again, the intentional speeding up of the death or not allowing natural death to take its course would be the problem here. So, and the other drug that I mentioned I don't know about that. I'm not a pharmacist. I'm not a doctor, so I don't know exactly how that would work. But thank you for your call, Paul. And I'm reminded of there was a friend of mine who was a priest who passed away some years ago, and he was one of the holiest people I've ever met. And again, hopefully we're all living saints, but this guy really was. His name was Father Greg Haddock, and he had a ravaging cancer that was just spreading throughout his abdomen. And I visited him in the hospital in his last days, and I saw him shortly before he died, and this guy was so holy. I mean, I always felt embarrassed going to confession with this guy. It's like, oh my gosh, I don't have to tell this guy about my sins because, you know, he's obviously just exuding holiness. But having said that, I mean, it's not like he hasn't heard this stuff before, and he always gave me just wonderful advice. He was such a great role model, and I found out after he passed away that he had essentially refused the painkillers at the hospital were trying to give him, and he wouldn't have been committing any kind of sin at all to accept them, but he simply wanted to offer up pain for the holy souls in purgatory, for other people's suffering, for other people's prayer intention. He essentially refused it, and I wasn't surprised when I found that out, but I was just in awe of his just ability to make that sacrifice. And again, like there would have been no sin in him accepting the painkillers, but that always just struck me and stayed with me. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Barbara, who is in Sacramento. Hi, Barbara.
For taking my call.
Oh yeah, you got it.
Yes, I'm a RN, and I recently have some experience with hospice, mm-hmm. also because of a loved one who passed away. And I also was involved in a program in our diocese where we studied a lot of Catholic moral teaching. Mm. So just to clarify, the answer to the previous gentleman's caller is it is totally morally permissible by the church to administer drugs like lorazepam and morphine for the alleviation of pain. Mm-hmm. That is the primary goal, is to relieve suffering. And if by chance, by somehow, it does hasten or bring about a faster death, that is morally permissible. That's not your primary goal. Your primary goal is to alleviate suffering. So you do not want to give these medications to hasten death. But if you are giving them for suffering, and a secondary effect is that someone's passing may be brought about a little more quickly, my understanding from what I studied in moral theology is that is permissible and okay. So I just wanted to add that to reassure the gentleman or anybody else.
Yeah, and Barbara, thanks for that clarification. And probably what we're looking at, and I don't know if you remember this term from what you studied, but it's probably falling under the principle of double effect, which is the intended the reason why you're doing this, administrating this drug, is to alleviate the pain. It has an unintended effect of something else happening. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago on the show in dealing with mothers who are pregnant, who have to receive a life-saving treatment. For example, they've got cancer. And an unintended and unwanted consequence of this is that their unborn child dies. That is not intended, and in saving the mother's life, that would not be sinful, because the death of the unborn child was not intended. It was not. It falls under what's called the principle of double effect. So it's an unintended consequence. So the intent of why you're doing it is a big part of it, which is one of the things I tried to say to Paul, who was calling earlier. But Barbara, thank you so much for that call. And if you want to call in, you can also weigh in on this, 888-914-9149. I've got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show, but we'll be right back right after this. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show, 888-914-9149. Well, folks, we haven't even got to All Hallows Eve yet. We haven't even got to All Souls Day yet, All Saints Day, but I do want to tell you, believe it or not, Advent is coming close on the heels of all those great feast days, and we got to get ready for that too. And I know when you go shopping, you're already seeing Christmas decorations out there, so I hate to get ahead of myself, but we do have a very special promotion here at Relevant Radio. We do this every Advent. We want you to be able to celebrate the Christmas season with a beautiful nativity set, and Relevant Radio is giving away 200 of these, and I want you to have your chance at these. Now, these are nativity sets that are made possible to give away to you because of a very generous donor who has provided these for us, so we thank this person. And they're hand-painted. They're great to put in, say, your front window of your home. If you have maybe a bay window or something like that, some people put them outside on their porch or their front yard, kind of evangelize through having a nativity set. So you can do this too. You can display the very true, the very humble and profound reason for the season, which is, of course, the birth of our Lord. But you can enter today. You only have until October the 16th. So it's coming up pretty soon, just 10 days from now. That's all the time you have to kind of put your name in this raffle, as it were, this online raffle that we're having to give away these 200 nativity sets. So if you're interested, just go to relevantradio.com/set. Relevantradio.com/set. That's how you do it. And you can proudly welcome Christ into your heart and home this year with this beautiful nativity set. You can sign up to win right now at relevantradio.com/set. So don't miss your opportunity. All right, let's get back to the phones right now. 888-914-9149. We're talking about euthanasia, the church's response to that. There's a piece that came out in The Cut from New York Magazine, where somebody who tragically did take his own life, an 85-year-old from Chicago by the name of David, flew to Switzerland and ended his own life by means of voluntary assisted death, another name for euthanasia. And he kind of explained his mindset in this article about why he did this. And he was coming at it from a pretty secular perspective. And I wanted to kind of ask you, what were some of the flaws in his thinking? What would you say to a loved one who's maybe considering doing such a thing? And how can we help people in this spot? All right, so let's go to back to the phones. Karen is calling from Lincoln, California. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Cale. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
So I wanted to continue to clarify also just about in terms of administering morphine and lorazepam. You know, in hospice, we use morphine not only for pain, but also for breathing. So the medication, what it does in terms of the whole breathing aspect of dealing with somebody at end of life is to help them and make that breathing more comfortable. Because it is very stressful to breathe, and so a lot of times what we use is morphine. When we use the lorazepam, we use the lorazepam for the anxiety related to the breathing and or the pain. So we have, you know, the mechanisms of the medications are used for dual purposes, not necessarily for pain. And so does it hasten the death? No, not really, because the death is generally going to occur anyway. Mm-hmm. And what those medications allow is for that that relaxation of body, so the body can progress, physiologically towards death, as well as emotionally and psychologically.
Yeah, and some people choose not to go that route. Have you ever come across a situation where a patient has said, "I don't want the morphine. I don't want anything to happen here. I just want this process to take place naturally."
Absolutely. Yeah. We get that on occasion a lot. And it's okay. We have to respect that. You know, we're dealing with what their wishes are and how they want, you know, and what they feel is important in terms of proceeding within their, you know, life and how they've lived and what they want in terms of their death as well. A lot of times we do say, you know, people have died the way they've lived. And, you know, that's so true. And the priest that you had mentioned earlier, you know, he was a very giving man. And so he died the way he lived.
Yeah, that's well said. That's well said. Thank you so much for that call, Karen. That's very true. We die the way that we live. And so, spiritual heroism isn't going to come about by accident. We really have to train for this, and starts now, because when we are faced with decisions where our moral mettle is tested, we can't expect to become spiritual Olympians at the drop of a hat. We can't be armchair athletes in the spiritual life and then expect to win in the supernatural Olympics. So we got to train, and St. Paul talks about that a lot. In his letters, this idea of mortification of the body while we're still living, like an athlete training who will deny himself the little treats. And in some ways, it might appear to be a harsh treatment of the body, but it's training to create strength, to create endurance. We need that in the spiritual life as well. And that's why the church has always recommended, from the beginning, the church has always recommended voluntary mortification. And this is what we do, maybe in a more intense way, in seasons like Lent, where we will make spiritual sacrifices in a more intense way. But I think it's a good thing to do all the time. And you can't. I have another priest friend who says, "Oh, I don't do mortifications because life gives you enough mortifications on its own. So why create your own?" I'm not so sure that's a spiritually heroic way to look at things. It's like, well, life's going to give you enough lemonade. Don't make any of your own. So I don't know. I think that might be a bit of a, I'm not gonna say who this guy is, but in case you're listening, Father, you're spiritually soft. But we all need to get better on that front. I know I certainly do as well. All right, let's go to Tom in Cookeville, Tennessee. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Cale. Appreciate you and your show.
Oh, God bless you. Thank you.
You know, I on this issue, I'm not saying that I'm rock solid established, but I don't see that euthanasia comes under a violation of thou shalt not murder, because it has to do with compassion, you know, and I don't know what I would do, but I know if I had a loved one that wanted to just go on and be with the Lord, you know, I just don't think that, a lethal injection is comes under that thou shalt not murder, you know, God's law. I just, because of the intent of it. I mean, we see animals, you know, that are in pain and you know, in compassion, we shoot them, you know, and or inject them with, you know, something that puts them to sleep.
Yeah. Well, Tom, thank you for your call and thank you for your kind words about the show, calling from Tennessee, Rocky Top there. It's great to hear from you. And I would very respectfully disagree with you on that. And it does fall under thou shalt not murder, the commandment. And it is different, I would say, from if there is an animal that is diseased and quote unquote putting the I had to do this with my own dog, my beloved Egbert, a few months ago. He was dying. And now, do animals have an eternal soul? No, it's on a different level than with human beings. And I don't want to get into the whole question of our dogs in heaven. As a dog lover, I hope that's the case. But it's a lot different when it comes to a human person created in the image and likeness of God. God, as the scripture says, only God can give life and deal death. Jesus says in the book of Revelation, I hold the keys of death and of Hades. And this idea of trying to grab those keys from God is very much tied, I think, to the original sin, this temptation to be like God, to take control. And I think it's something that we have to watch out for all the time. But there's no reason why we can't give somebody mercy and help to ease their pain with palliative care. Thank you so much for the conversation, though. It's Cale Clark Show. We will be back tomorrow. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.